Hello and welcome to Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 24th of March 2008, brought to you by azonano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of Azo Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear how researchers have finally built a device that can weigh materials in the femtogram range, how nanotechnology is helping bald men to regrow their hair, and we'll hear about a new nano battery that has a virtually limitless shelf life. In this week's Azo Nano interview, Azo Nano's Cameron Chai speaks to Don Eigler of IBM Almaden Research Center about how such things as atomic manipulation, quantum computing, and other nanotechnologies will infiltrate computing, information technology, and our everyday lives. These stories and more in this edition of Azo Nano News. Scientists have developed a new form of stretchable silicon integrated circuit that can wrap around complex shapes such as spheres, body parts, and aircraft wings, and can operate during stretching, compressing, folding, and other types of extreme mechanical deformations without a reduction in electrical performance. As a result, the notion that silicon cannot be used in such applications because it's intrinsically brittle and rigid has been tossed out the window. Through carefully optimized mechanical layouts and structural configurations, silicon can be used in integrated circuits that are fully foldable and stretchable. The new designs and fabrication strategies could produce wearable systems for personal health monitoring and therapeutics, or systems that wrap around mechanical parts, such as aircraft wings and fuselages, to monitor structural properties. Finding a simple and convenient technique that combines nanoscale structural measurements and chemical identification has been an elusive goal. With current analytical instruments, spatial resolution is too low, signal-to-noise ratio too poor, sample preparation too complex, or sample size too large to be of good service. Now, researchers at the University of Illinois have demonstrated a method for simultaneous structural and chemical characterization of samples at the femtogram level and below. A femtogram is 1/4 of a gram. The measurement technique combines the extraordinary resolution of atomic force microscopy and the excellent chemical identification of infrared spectroscopy. Researchers anticipate that this approach will help bridge the gap between nanoscale structural analysis and conventional molecular spectroscopy. Imagine having one polymer and one small molecule that instantly assemble into a flexible but strong sac in which you can grow human stem cells, creating a sort of miniature laboratory. And that sac, if used for cell therapy, could cloak the stem cells from the human body's immune system and biodegrade upon arriving at its destination, releasing the stem cells to do their work. A research team from the Northwestern University's Institute for Bio-Nanotechnology and Medicine has created such sacs and demonstrated that human stem cells will grow in them. The researchers also report that the sacs can survive for weeks in culture and that their membranes are permeable to proteins. Proteins, even large ones, can travel freely across the membrane. This new and unexpected mode of self-assembly also can produce thin films whose size and shape can be tailored. The method holds promise for use in cell therapy and other biological applications, as well as in the design of electronic devices by self-assembly, such as solar cells, and the design of new materials. Research results from University of Maryland physicists show that graphene, a new material that combines aspects of semiconductors and metals, could be a leading candidate to replace silicon in applications ranging from high-speed computer chips to biomedical sensors. The research reveals that graphene conducts electricity at room temperature with less intrinsic resistance than other known material and is one of the materials being considered as a potential replacement of silicon for future computing. Graphene is also a very promising material for chemical and biochemical sensing applications, in which an electrical signal from, for instance, a molecule absorbed on the sensing device is translated into an electrical signal by changing the conductivity of the device. And As a wide variety of nanoparticles continue to demonstrate their ability to improve the delivery of imaging agents and drugs to tumours, nanoparticle researchers have turned their attention to the challenge of systematically determining how a given nanoparticle's physical and chemical characteristics affect its ability to target tumours. Such data could provide drug developers with guidelines to help them select the most effective type of nanoparticle for a given therapeutic or imaging application. A team of investigators at the MIT Harvard Center for Cancer Nanotechnology Excellence described one such approach to systematizing nanoparticle development. The investigators found that they could fine-tune both the size and drug-releasing properties of the nanoparticles, which were targeted to the prostate-specific membrane antigen found on the surface of prostate cancer cells. By studying the effect of each change on nanoparticle uptake by prostate cancer cells growing in tissue culture, the investigators were able to identify the specific formulation that optimized tumor uptake in vivo. M-Phase Always Ready Incorporated has successfully fabricated nano-structured separators, which are critical to the production of their smart nanobattery. These separators allow the smart nanobattery electrolyte to be supported and kept away from the electrodes until needed, resulting in a battery that has an almost infinite shelf life. The activation of the smart nanobattery is then accomplished by the phenomenon of electrowetting, which allows the electrolyte to penetrate the separator and wet the electrodes, thus completing the circuit. Electrowetting is a phenomenon of controlling or changing the surface contact of the liquid electrolyte, which sits atop the separator that allows the electrolyte to flow and make contact with the electrodes, producing power. The fabrication of the separator has resulted in a significant breakthrough in the design of super hydrophobic nanostructures capable of supporting liquid electrolytes in the presence of solid electrode material and, at the same time, being able to produce electricity generation by the smart nanobattery once activated, providing power on command. Lightwave Logic, a technology company focused on the development of electro-optic polymer chips for applications in high-speed fiber-optic telecommunications and optical computing, has commenced production of its first prototype photonic chip. Photonic or electro-optic devices are the backbone of the internet and telephone networks. The production of polymer-based photonic switches has been the fabled holy grail of the industry for over two decades. Plastics are less expensive, easier to produce, and have been demonstrated to transmit information at higher speeds than the current state of the art. Lunar Innovations Incorporated announced today the discovery that a nanomedicine prototype aids in the growth of new hair follicles. Scientists at NanoWorks have been developing a portfolio of new candidates based on antioxidant nanomaterials, which could lead to a platform technology for treating a wide range of diseases. One of the new nanomedicine prototypes, after only 2 weeks of treatment, was found to increase the number of hair follicles fourfold in mice which are born genetically hairless. Luna is working with scientists at the Hamner Institute for Health Sciences to further pursue their discovery in the hope of identifying a therapeutic aid to potentially treat male pattern baldness. In addition to hair loss due to heredity, Luna's discovery may also aid in hair regeneration for loss due to other medical conditions. A new technique for assessing the damage radiation causes to DNA indicates that the spatial arrangement of damaged sites or lesions is more important than the number of lesions in determining the severity of the damage. The technique, developed by scientists at the U.S. Department of Energy's Brookhaven National Laboratory, helps reveal why high-energy charged particles, such as the heavy ions in outer space, are more potentially harmful than lower-energy forms of radiation, such as X-rays and gamma rays. The research could help clarify the risks faced by future astronauts flying long-term missions to the Moon or Mars. Understanding the effects on humans of radiation exposure, whether in the natural environment, in outer space, in the workplace, or due to radiation therapy, requires insight into the induction and repair of damage to DNA. In this week's Azo Nano interview, Cameron Chai speaks to Don Eigler of IBM Almaden Research Center about how such things as atomic manipulation, quantum computing, and other nanotechnologies will infiltrate computing, information technology, and our everyday lives. Pioneering IBM nanotech research is discussed, as well as current research and upcoming applications for nanotechnologies.
This is Cameron Chai here from azonano.com, and I have great pleasure today to be able to speak to Don Eigler from IBM. He's an IBM fellow and works out at the IBM Almaden Research Center. Good afternoon, Don. How are you doing today?
Doing well, Cameron. How are you?
Very well. Welcome to Australia and the ICON conference down here in Melbourne. We hope that it's been enjoyable for you.
Oh, it's been a blast. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Good to hear. IBM, most people know IBM as a computing company. You're not necessarily known for work that you do in nanotechnology. What do you guys do that relates to nanotechnology?
There's a lot of ways in which you can understand the importance of nanotechnology to IBM and the importance of IBM to nanotechnology. Let's deal with that last point. One of the things that really gave nanotechnology a big boost was the invention of the scanning tunneling microscope and the invention of the atomic force microscopes. Those were things that came out of IBM's research laboratories back in the early 1980s and the late 1980s. And many people regard these two inventions as the things which have really enabled the nanotechnology revolution that's going on today. You could say it started in IBM labs and not be far from missing a good part of the truth. How does nanotechnology relate to IBM's products? It's very clear. If you look at what goes into making chips, computer chips nowadays, computer or semiconductor technology has become a nanotechnology. It's become so small that the size of the structures that we use in those semiconductor chips is measured in the tens of nanometers. So it's an area where nanotechnology is already playing a very important role. It's what I would call an evolutionary nanotechnology, in the sense that it used to be on a larger scale and has shrunk to the point, and step by step shrinking, it has shrunk to the point where it's now a nanotechnology.
Okay, for anyone that's not familiar, some of your earlier work that you pioneered was you were able to manipulate xenon atoms to write IBM using a scanning tunneling microscope.
Right.
Are you looking to use similar sorts of technology to build structures and products for the future of computing?
Not necessarily as a manufacturing technology, but we use atom manipulation and the ability to build things on a very small scale as a tool in our laboratory. And where that's important is that it allows us to explore properties of very small structures that just could not be explored otherwise. We get to build structures that could never exist otherwise. Structures built at the atom by atom scale. They're very small, but they can sometimes be quite extraordinary. So for instance, we've built the world's smallest logic circuits, far and away the world's smallest logic circuits, by putting molecules where we want them to go and laying them out in a way that they actually did logical operations, just as a transistor might help you do logical operations in a chip.
And your lab, I think, just the other day came up with a world first. Could you tell us a little bit about that one?
Well, we've been moving atoms for a long time and with some degree of success, but in order to really understand what it's required to move an atom, or whether an atom is going to hold still or slide when it interacts with other atoms, you need to understand the forces between that atom and the underlying substrate. And what we did, that's very recent, was to find a way to measure how much force is required to move an atom across the surface. Not just in one direction, but in any direction, we could discover or measure how much force is required to move atoms. That plays a key role in allowing us to build an understanding of how things are going to act if we put them in certain positions, whether they'll hold still or whether they won't. If they move, where do they move? How much force is required to move them?
So this sort of technology should be able to really allow you to build structures really from the ground up and in a very tailored fashion?
Well, we can already do that for a certain limited number of atoms on a certain limited number of surfaces. The step forward that we just took was the step that has really helped us understand what kind of forces are required. And with that knowledge, we can now do a much better job of understanding what it is that we can build and how we might be able to build it.
What sort of nanotechnology do you see us using in the future? How do you see it impacting on information technology in the future?
Imagine computer chips with 200,000 times the computational horsepower that they have today. What might they be able to do? Another way to think about it is, imagine a computer chip with the same computational power as a CPU in your laptop, but shrink it by a factor of 200,000. Where could that go, and how could that be utilized in that environment? It could go into an incredibly small environment. It might be able to, the things I'm most excited about are the applications of information technology and information processing in biological environments, in animals and in humans, could have a huge impact on health. And then people will want it also. I know I would certainly love to have a little prosthetic memory chip that could just go underneath my skin somewhere and could keep all kinds of useful information with me and only with me and only accessible by me, and I can't lose it because it's always with me. It's like having a little friend who remembers everything for you.
I think we could all use one of them sometimes. And what about things like quantum computing you were talking about, and other ways of transferring memory and things like that? You guys are working on those sorts of technologies?
We have had a very active role in the early days of quantum computing and quantum information processing, and we still continue our research in that area. So that's something that we are interested in, and we certainly are watching what's going on in the world. There's a tremendous activity in the world of science in that area. But you have to remember that quantum computing is something that people would like to achieve, but has proven to be so complex that it has thwarted everybody who has been working in the field, except for making very, very small demonstrations of just handling a few qubits. It's still a very long ways away from being something which is useful.
Is there anything that you can tell us that you or IBM are working on that might result in something that we might see in the not-too-distant future?
The work in my own laboratory is work which, if it's going to impact technologies, is 20, 30, 40 years down the road. So not from my own laboratory, but there's progress being made in our laboratories all the time which will impact what you'll see in the future. It will have a real impact on how computers behave. So for instance, we're working on non-volatile memory systems so that you don't have to worry about booting your computer. You just shut your computer off and then you just turn it back on. It's right back where it started. We've made tremendous progress in reducing the amount of power consumed by your computer chips. This is, of course, important for all of us who use mobile computers, where the lifetime of our batteries is really important. Reducing that power is something which is very, very important, not just to us, but to the whole industry, and of course, because it's what our clients need. So we've made a lot of progress in that, in particular the so-called high-K dielectrics or the gate oxides or the gate insulators in our transistors. There's many ways in which we are doing things at the nanometer length scale which will affect what it is that you can do with your computers and the cost of your computer and the performance of your computer, but it may not be quite obvious.
Well, and how did you originally come to be involved with nanotechnology?
Well, I grew up training as a physicist, and in particular trying to study and understand the physical properties of surfaces. And it was in the early 1980s when Gerd Binnig and Heini Rohr from our IBM Zurich Research Laboratory invented the scanning tunneling microscope. And I thought about that. I said, oh, that's just going to be a fantastic scientific instrument that's going to enable all kinds of progress, and I thought I would get involved with that. And so I did, utilizing the special skills which I developed up to that point, which was doing experiments on clean surfaces and at low temperatures. And so it was combining my my surface science skills, my low temperature skills, with what had come out of the Zurich laboratory that led me to build the first low temperature scanning tunneling microscopes that operated in ultra high vacuum and low temperature. And that's what really got me into nanoscale science, because I was studying things at the atomic scale.
So you were probably involved with nanotechnology before we really even had the name nanotechnology.
I believe so. I can't remember exactly when the term was coined by a Japanese scientist. His name will come to mind in just a moment. But I think that was that might have been back in the 1970s, around the mid-1970s.
So that really does make you a pioneer in the field, in the nano field then?
I think to be a pioneer in the nano field just required that you happen to be in the right place in the right time doing the right kind of research, and those things just sort of happen.
Well, maybe an accidental hero, but one that certainly made a name for yourself in the field anyway. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Don, thanks very much for your time and spending some time with Azo Nano, and we wish you all the best for the rest of your trip here in Australia.
Thank you, Cameron.
Azo Nano Business News. BioForce Nanosciences, a producer of integrated biological and mechanical systems for life science researchers at the micro and nanoscales, announced that it's launching a surface patterning service utilizing its Nano Enabler and Nano Enabler CB molecular printers. These molecular printers provide researchers with the capability to print tiny domains of biological materials on surfaces with nanometer spatial precision. Australian nanotechnology research and development has received a boost with the announcement that Australia's national facilities for nanoscale fabrication and characterisation are to work closely together for the benefit of all Australian researchers. A memorandum of understanding between the Australian Microscopy and Microanalysis Research Facility and Australian National Fabrication Facility Limited was signed at the 2008 International Conference on Nanoscience and Nanotechnology in Melbourne. Governor Mitch Daniels joined executives from IBM, Semiconductor Research Corporation, and National Institute of Standards and Technology today to announce plans to open a $61 million nanoelectronics research centre on the campus of the University of Notre Dame. The collaboration is designed to create new research opportunities that will lead to development of atomic-scale technologies and drive future breakthroughs in computing. Pennsylvania Nanomaterials Commercialization Center concluded its third round of funding for companies using nanotechnology to develop new products and processes. After a competitive review of submitted proposals, the center's Technical Advisory Committee and Governing Board have approved funding for Pittsburgh-based NanoLambda Incorporated, Philadelphia-based Y-Carbon Incorporated, and Plextronics Incorporated. PPG Industries has volunteered to participate in the BASIC program of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Nanoscale Materials Stewardship Program. The EPA launched the voluntary program in January to gather key scientific information to help it assess and, where appropriate, make decisions on chemical nanoscale materials in or slated for production. Well, that was Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 24th of March 2008. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To read expanded versions of the stories you've heard about in this podcast, or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening. Yeah.